Thank you for listening to a reading presented by the Poetry Center of Chicago. The Poetry Center is an independent, nonprofit arts organization promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. To learn more about the Poetry Center, to read poems by our students in Chicago Public Schools, or to donate, please visit www.poetrycenter.org.
I'm John Van Doren, and I want to welcome you to this, our fourth reading of the season by the Poetry Center of Chicago. I have to begin tonight by giving you some melancholy news, which is that Martha Friedberg, a director of the center, and an eminent figure in the cultural life of this city, died last month. Some of you knew Martha, of course, and even those who didn't may have seen her at the readings, a small woman with white hair and a patrician face who appeared each time a little stooped at the last and listened attentively to all that was said. But you won't know unless I tell you how important she was to this organization, of which she was a founding member, and to which she was far and away the most generous contributor from its beginnings 20 years ago. None of us would be here tonight had it not been for her never-failing support, which kept the center going in its needy days and allowed it to become the relatively solid and established institution it is now. She would deprecate her importance in this, as she would her own quality as a poet, which nevertheless was real, as two books testify. But we remember both our debt and her distinction, and wish you to share by your awareness in our gratitude for what so modestly and for so long a time she gave us all. Our reading tonight is a double reading, as it was in December. We are to hear from Roger Mitchell and Lucien Strike. I am not going to try and say myself anything about either of the readers tonight, because I've got other people to do that.
Good evening. I'm Mark Perlberg, on the board of the Poetry Center forever, it seems, happily. And we'll soon be hearing from Lucien Strike. Lucien Strike is the author, editor, or translator of 18 books of poems, anthologies, and essays. This year is a banner year even for him, since he's bringing out three of those books plus a chapbook. Lucien has won many, many awards, and I'll just cite a few of them. He held a university research fellowship at Northern Illinois in DeKalb, where he taught for many years. He was given the Governor's Award, that's Illinois, the Governor's Award for the Arts, and was awarded both Ford and Rockefeller Foundation fellowships, as well as various Illinois Arts Council literary awards. Most of you will know that he's a leading authority on Zen in the United States and Zen poetry. Lucien Strike's poems are characterized by their directness, openness, moments of revelation, and perhaps above all, by his humane attitude toward people and the other creatures with whom we share space on the planet. He tells me that he's especially happy to come back to the Poetry Center and read a second time. It was many years before this when he read the first time, and he's very happy to be reading in Chicago, his hometown, and doubly so to read at the Art Institute, which is one of his favorite places in town, and one that his father, who was a noted painter who exhibited with John Sloane, took him many times from his boyhood on. It's a pleasure to welcome Lucian Strike, and an honor as well.
It's an honor for me to be introduced by a fine poet. Thank you very much, Mark. I'm going to begin with some poems about this city. Luck, 1932. After the market crash, everyone short on luck, I squinted out my bedroom window for the last time. Holding the rabbit's foot I'd swapped my slingshot for, counted numbers for a miracle that wouldn't come. As the last mock-orange petal in Andrade's yard spun into summer, the junk man divvied up our table, chairs, beds, all we could not cart off from Chicago for a piddling sum. Clutching my can of marbles, baseball mitt, I followed mother, lugging my baby sister, worldly goods stuffed in a canvas bag, tracking my father, job to job, St. Louis to Columbus. All that year I made spells, counting heads, trees, fireflies, polished my wishbone 7 times again, until I landed back in the old city, raced to Washington Park, joined my playmates, Shorty, Tonsils, Mike, riding Taft's human pyramid of time. As I explained how luck had brought us back, I found real magic, twigs sparkling into flower before my eyes. Still, when very young, I was brought by my father to witness Auguste Piccard's ascension in his balloon from Soldier Field. This became part of a rather long sequence on the city called The Chief of Chicago. And this is the only poem I'll read from that sequence. The balloon to Auguste Piccard, his day at Soldier Field. As you readied the balloon, tugging at the ropes, I grabbed my father's hand. Around us in stone tiers, the others began to hold their breath. I watched my father mostly, thinking him very brave for toying with his pipe. Then, when you filled the giant sack with heated air and waving, climbed into the gondola with a bunch of roses thrust at you, I freed my hand, cheered, and started clapping. I caught your eye, you smiled, then left the ground. The people filed for exits, and when twisting in the wind, you veered above the lake, a pin against the thundercloud. But I refused to budge. My father stooped to beat me and cracked his precious briar on the stone. And still I wouldn't leave. He called me a young fool and dragged me bawling to the streetcar. But I couldn't stop watching you. I stayed up all that night, soaring ever higher on your star, through tunneled clouds and air so blue, I saw blue spots for hours. In the morning, my father laughed and said you came back down. I didn't believe him then and never will. I told him I was glad he broke his pipe. We have a very famous landmark in the city. We have more than one, of course, many more than one. But I'm particularly fond of the Picasso. When Picasso died, I thought, apart from the sadness I felt, and I'm sure many of you shared that, what a sadness, too, for the world as a whole, which has suddenly, with his death, become a very ordinary place. And I had this vision of all those things he had taken apart in his rage for disorder in the interest of order, coming together again in a very blah way, very humdrum way. In memoriam, Pablo Picasso. All is ordinary again. In a thousand places, convergences, displaced parts flying together, an ear, a nose, a breast spinning like a hand grenade, a third eye shot with cloud, deep, staring. And here in Chicago, a great flapping of wings. The poem I'm about to read, I call Cherries, and there is a very clear Chicago reference. In fact, it's the elevator tracks on 63rd Street. I grew up in that area of the city. Cherries. Because I sit eating cherries, which I did not pick, a girl goes bad under the elevator tracks, will never be whole again. Because I want the full bag, grasping, 25 children cry for food, gorging, I've none to offer. I want to care, I mean to, but not yet. A dozen cherries rattling at the bottom of my bag. One by one, I lift them to my mouth, slowly break their skin. 12 nations bleed. Because I love, because I need cherries, I cannot help them. My happiness, bought cheap, must last forever. I thought I'd read the next poem because we are so very close to the place where it's set. This and the next poem I'll read, the one after this one, are from another Chicago sequence, too long to read in its entirety. Grant Park. Crush of frost. They walk sharp-eyed, the paths familiar as their floors. Men nearing death, our fathers, pulled unresisting to the center. There on charged corners, they watch, chat, doze, heads lifted to the wind, that bringer, taker away, music in the welter of their lives. Day deepens. They rouse from benches, shiver, stare about, then cautiously return, each to his place, to read once more of what the day has brought. Another birth, another death. Another poem which in about a month or two will certainly be timely, City Spring. There's a slow twisting underground, as if a giant, winter long, buried under ice, clutching roots, now turns face up, stirring the ancient sexual play. Everywhere his warm flesh touches, green, yellow, red. The poem Rooms begins in Chicago and goes on to other places. One, the casket under the rose in the funeral parlor is not where you live, my mother. Garbling words for father, sister, son, aunts, brother-in-law, wife, on an alien stage. I enter a place high above daffodils, hyacinths, tulips of neighboring gardens, where fire-scaled butterflies wing free among leaves, as you sit beside me in tears at the old kitchen table, dreading the moment I leave, a young soldier off to the Pacific in World War II. I quietly touch your hand, promise to take care, write often. In foxholes, opening mail, I see you daily, sending your lifeline of words from that room. On my return, I let myself in to surprise you sorting my letters like charms on the bright checkered cloth. This time tears come with joy. So what am I doing making my sermon here? You are outside the window, looking in, the monarch you once made a poem, pure spirit, wings carrying you above the rose, to calm your children's and their children's grief. Two. Forward observers, fresh from mission in the hills of Okinawa, we crawl back to our foxholes, under a battle hymn of mortar, flak, and fire, charged with rumor that our president has died. Ginger, always skeptic, rubs his three-day stubble, mutters, at least, on the contrary, oh yeah. Hupsy, the clown, gulps aqua velva lotion in despair. Weary, I lie in my earth room, just 4 feet deep, rest on my duffel, feeling the outline of letters from home, Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass under my head. I think of other times, time that might never be, cry out for all the dead. As howitzers split distance and the shells aim back, I stare up, wondering, at my roof of shrapnel and stars. Three. Children's voices strain, round on round, sweetly breathless, follow their father, the troubadour, fiddling a shanty in Paris, outside the church of Saint-Germain-des-Prés. The crowd bravos, coins chime on asphalt. Farther on, a trumpeter passes his hat in an outdoor cafe, where I turn down the street to the Hotel de Bussy, stop once again to look into the door. After 35 years, how to explain to a weary-faced clerk my need to peer into a room the size of a closet, my home for 2 years as a GI student back from war. Trudging there, laden with books from the Sorbonne each night, I'd prop on the sagging bed, back to one wall, feet up on the other, stare at the candle's soft flame in the long dresser mirror. I'd read through the dictionary, stalking new words for verse scrawled on used paper bags, old envelopes airmailed from home to the beat of the asthmatic radiator. How I would love to climb those stairs once more, see where it all began, making a bold check in the G's for Granadilla, where visions of stigmata, nail marks, thorns, became a poem heavy with maypops, fruit of the passion flower. The title poem of the book that I'm publishing in the fall, the book being published in London, a rather large collection of my poems, is called Where We Are, and it is from my collected poems, and I'll read that. It's very much a backyard poem, a DeKalb backyard poem, but gives, I think, the spirit or a sense of the spirit of that book. Where We Are. I sit beneath the linden's heart-spread leaves, watch three starlings on the birdbath, watching me. Book on one knee, I drain my glass. Young shoots already doomed thrust withering tendrils through the clay-bogged soil. Last night at the Mayfair, girls in Elizabethan garb offered a madrigal to buds of spring. Today, the neighbor's cat stalks fledglings in the pine. Time was I'd run him off. Now I just sit and trust to his bad luck. Slowly, sun tinges leaves, hazes pine needles. A mower sputters. Cat leaps from the shade into the moment where we are. And now I'd like to read poems from my new collection. These are new poems. The first two are the kind of poem, perhaps, that all writers write from time to time, poems about the difficulty of writing poems. Wool gathering. Caught in a web of sweat and ginger, I review day's efforts, my butter-fingered phrases choking the rubbish bin. Dream I'm the Roman poet Cinna, threatened by the mob for my bad verse. Want to escape this twanging of the nerves. Find clear as silk a brushstroke in the sun. Rewind the music, take a giant leap backwards. And then poets, at least some of them, are often doodling. Doodle. Ink flows beyond the first range of hills, endlessly follows a silent path, slips by the clutter of cities, skirting pure landscape, down to the ocean, out of a blot, tangled in wind, come a plaintive gull song, an urgent wail call rumbling throughout the deep, the last cry of victims lost in the pull of a restless tide that draws down images of planets like frail moths ringing the stars. Everyone who has taken a strong interest in Asian culture as I have for so many years, is bound to be concerned about what is happening in Japan, or for that matter, everywhere in the world these days, where industry has taken over so much of our lives. When I was back there last, I revisited a favorite shrine in a city where I spent a very happy year as a visiting lecturer, Yamaguchi. And the shrine of the crane is one I visited very often. And I was moved to write this poem, Shrine of the Crane. Once, far back in time, moving as slow shadows in a mime by the stone lanterns, chipped, discolored now, processions of shrine maidens, vestal sprigs crossed at their breasts, led by stiff-robed priests, black lacquered clogs tap-tapping on the path, filed by worshippers under red torii's, up the stone steps, passing three fox shrines aflush with offerings, coins, rice cakes, twigs embroidered with a paper twist of prayer. Today, those hungry ghosts with lofty dreams have fled the hum of useless prayer on prayer to get ahead, outstrip, outdo all dreams lost somewhere in the fold of time, deaf to the song of cranes. Mark Perberg was kind enough to mention my father, who I'm glad to say is still with us. He's in his 90s. In recent years, his imaginary life has taken over. This is by no means uncommon in the very old. I wouldn't call them fibs. I certainly wouldn't call them lies. But he engages in fantasy, visiting my father. My father, who would take his belt to me for telling whoppers when I was a boy, now whispers secrets on our autumn walks. Daydreams spill with leaves that shimmy by us, freckling the grass. Words leap from the shadow of his 93-year skirmish, become the bullet searing through him on the Western Front. Fame's thrust upon him for his sculpture of primeval man. Cautiously, I gesture where geese fan over, ribboning the sky. But lost in fancy, he unveils his monumental visions in museums through the world, turning by remnants of blue asters, chicory, and Queen Anne's lace, we hug farewell. He stares into my eyes, assuring me that duns of Oxford, Moscow, the Sorbonne called daily for his expertise. Driving home, I pull up for a field mouse, watch him dart back into ripened corn. Passing a stand of maple canopies, I need to touch, hold on to, run my fingers through their gold. Waiting for the light. They have laid down their plowshares. Mile upon mile, along Quentin Road, villas blossom on richest soil in the USA. New developments, Goose Cove, Hunter's Creek, Willow Bend, sprout where the corn grew so high. Pulling up as the light turns red on the corner of Route 22, by wood frame house, man, woman, and boy are having it out on the lawn. The man shakes his fist. The woman reacts in kind. The boy, hoarse with outrage, runs inside, slamming the door. As the light changes, I rev off into what's left of the day. On the way to Rockford, on the scenic route down Cherry Valley Road, in a freak blizzard, windshield wipers stropping at the ice, squinting at glazed branches doodling the backdrop of the sky, I slow down as I come upon the tipsied farmhouse, county eyesore, rubbish heap of skeletal barn, sheds, car parts, rusted tractor, pickup, now phantom sculptures under snow. No sign of the old man who in summer basks with dog, cat, chickens on his sinking stoop, a lone philosopher. As I pass by, a cow stares upward from the frozen patch, a curtain in an upstairs window moves. The next poem is about a student whose life moved me very much. Student. Oddly, the lone sound of the white stick steers the blind girl through the classroom door. The look behind her eyes, a poem in waiting. Running her fingers over fine-tuning lines of Yeats's Second Coming, she stares into a void strung out with stars. And the miracle comes as she reads out slowly, softly, voice rising with passion, music caught up in the wind, leaving the room in a silence richly dark. The poem I'm about to read is as much my dear wife's poem as it is mine. She told me something about her life in wartime London. And she was a very small girl then, very young. And as she told me of those days, I thought I heard a song, war song. It was a moment summer sounds breathless, drifts into bittersweet autumn, and the woody resonance of poplars braced for winds to come, and the tremor of rushes sparked passion, and mothers were laughing, and fathers aimed children into the cloudless sky, caught them giggling, begging for more. Babies blossomed, pulses of lovers ticked over like restless bees. Rumors came faster than thoughts, and the news was war. In the hush before morning, amber of street lamps, pinpricks of stars, frantic dreams slipped away as light swallowed darkness through open windows, a desolate season of chill air seeped in, while fathers, sons, lovers, spare kit in duffels, marched down the high road, caught in a maelstrom to goodness knows where. Keep a stiff upper lip, they said, back before trees turn red. Lovers were sighing, children were whining, babies were fussing because mothers were crying. Leaves became drafts of birds racing in bitter wind, bare branches pointing like fists clenched in grief. But as a lull dawdled on, weeks, months turned over, and lovers wrote letters till fingers were thumbs, and mothers hummed once again, kettles boiled shrilly, babes suckled and burped, content as before, and the children paraded, sticks harnessed to shoulders. They took sides and hated, and took turns at killing, then went home forgiven because they were friends. Columbines reared heads in summer's kaleidoscope. Roses by hollyhocks scented the day. The old with their whispers of old wars mulled over, while children linked daisies and wore them as crowns. Babes sleeping in shade smiled through cicada chant. Mothers, lovers sought news that would bring their men home. It was then that the warning came, rising and falling, and bird song was lost in the droning of planes. Like comets of fire and ice, bombs were colliding, time splintered, walls shattered, real war had come. And as the smoke fizzled and fires were gutted, a hush settled in. No mothers for crying, no lovers for sighing, no babies for fussing, no children for whining. And soon through the rubble, wild flowers were blooming. I'm thinking of London still. London matinee. Three strangers at the bus stop, walk-ons in a farce, squint into distance, lines best forgotten, wrote a blank script, no cue forthcoming, posters like backdrops, staging an image, framed in the shadows, leading to nowhere, three strangers at the bus stop, newspapers under arm, promise of scenes to come, violence, dreams gone sour, love twists, freak blizzards, wars in the distance. They eye one another, marooned in a silence. And this poem has as its setting the local jewel supermarket. Shopping. On our weekly jaunt into the supermart, my wife and I part company among the green groceries. The martyr in me takes his punishment without a gripe. While she pokes at bananas, veg, fine combs of lettuce, chooses her iris, daffodils, a bit of green, I traipse along the aisles, outflanking push carts, dodging elbows, baskets, steer by baked beans, brunes, sultanas, marmalade and nuts, all bran, pickled cabbage. Passing the cat and dog food, I'm confronted by a man who seems to know me, plasters me against the toilet paper, and begins the complex story of his life. By now, my wife is going through the checkout. I try to get a word in while he's through with affair number three and coming up to four. I take my courage in my hands, tell him I've got to go, take off, heave bags into our old car's trunk as he comes up behind me to conclude his tale. Says, "What's your name again?" Then, with a puzzled frown, "Hey, do I know you?" Here's a poem which is unfortunately still timely. Bosnia. Trees still bend in the winds of Bosnia, while the fool's harvest of death is tallied each day. As a candle burns down and the ritual of living goes on, shops open and close, mosques, churches are filled. The pot simmers as if awaiting the footsteps of children out playing in snow. Soon to become silent snow angels caught in bitter games of their fathers. Where, in a pitiless landscape, nobody wins and the rules are not fair. And we watch as the generals carp and the victims bleed on the 10 o'clock news. Another very sad thing happening, still happening, and this in Latin America. You know the death squads sent out to murder children in, among other places, Bogota. Sent there by merchants, usually, people afraid of the bad image they give their city, etc. Docudrama. So many ways to suffer, cast-offs, no names, orphans of Bogota run with rats, lice-ridden dogs, scabied cats, leery of the TV special panning the great cathedral. Trendy streets. They swarm from hiding places, collar purses ripped through cars, swiping their daily bread from well-stocked shelves. Merchants, swanky shoppers, transfixed as a mural drying on the wall, wait on the death squad bullets to pick them off like flies, bursting the bubble of their bitter world. Blood, a tear or so, shine on the stones, frozen forever in a camera's eye. Just a few more poems. The Round. Slowly, dark through the sycamore, shadows the window. Fuzzes, wind-dodging birds, set down in its branches. I listen in wonder to icicles chiming night rituals of winter. Wait for dawn's whirl spin of light and the shiver of wings. For Helen on her birthday. Somewhere among wildflowers in a quiet place, as yet undredged, untrampled, dearest, is a small mound that one day will hold a scrap of granite bearing our poor name. When footsteps of our children and their children fade, do not despair. We will have begun another journey into the unknown, content as always, holding tightly to each other. And finally, a poem about illness and recovery. Voyage. That was the year midsummer's heat wave knocked us all for loops. Cats, squirrels, up, down, round the oak and sycamore, mobbed the birdbath, scratched in frenzy at the camelback packed earth. Birds veered cockeyed, whomped the kitchen window. Grass snakes frizzled on the concrete path. That was the year mosquitoes failed to guzzle as I drifted by the parched Kishwaukee River, caught up with my wife and daughter for a turn around the park, faltered as I stepped down from the bridge. That was the year the paramedics strapped me in the helicopter, pointed me to stars, in fits and starts between the cockleburrs of galaxies, my eyes blurred up with ghosts of mayhem, fireflies, outcasts sifting garbage on hot city streets. That was the year on hold, riddled with lifelines in an alien bed. I thumbed the Sunday book page, stared at faces of those Auschwitz children waiting a turn upon the Zyklon carousel, near the last photograph of Primo Levi, their fire-eyed witness, before he took his life, slamming the door on half a century's pain. And this year, botched up once again, heart monitor intact, cut off from war zone static, buzz and scuttle of the misery out there. My wife, my dearest friend, stroked the blue flower round the ivy in my arm, coaxed darkness from my eyes with tapestries of words, sent acrobatic sparrows rising like last autumn's leaves from fresh-turned soil, wove flocks of scarlet tanagers above gold sovereign dandelions, unthreaded winter hair of willows greening into spring. And this year, back full circle in the summer heat, I know for all it lacks, this world is still the only place, and walking in a flame of sunset, I have things to do. Thank you.